To episode 26 of the Bunt to the Gap podcast. I am Dave. I am joined by Adam.
Hey.
And Sweet Nick, our producer.
How's it going, guys?
Pretty good. We are on episode 26, and episode 26 is brought to you by the number of innings pitched by Joe Smith this year, the second most by a Blue Jays reliever after Ryan Tepera. But Joe Smith has already become a pretty reliable piece of this Toronto Blue Jays bullpen.
Yeah, what's he, something like 50-something strikeouts?
He has already 40 strikeouts. He has an ERA of 3.04. That is an ERA plus of 1.44. And his strikeouts per nine is up to 13.5. So Joe Smith has been an absolute bargain for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, like I was going to say, a lot more reliable than Jason Grilli, which is not hard to do, but...
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Jason Grilli, because yesterday Jason Grilli set a record. He was historically bad. No Blue Jays pitcher has ever given up four home runs in the same inning, but Jason Grilli smashed that record.
Was it pitcher or reliever specifically?
I think it was pitcher. I think it was any pitcher to give up four home runs in one inning.
Yeah, which brings me to my next question, though. Like, why don't you pull him after two home runs, let alone three or four?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a great question. I wanted to start this podcast with Jason Grilli. Chris Henderson for jaysjournal.com wrote what we don't want to admit about Jason Grilli. And I think basically the argument in the article is basically it's maybe time for either the Blue Jays to cut bait with Jason Grilli or Jason Grilli to hang up his cleats.
Yeah, and you know what, though? They're not going to cut him until after the Fire Up the Grilli apron promo, which is like in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, it would be terrible if they let him go before that. They just have all these Jason Grilli aprons.
Yeah, that either A, you have to give away with no player on the roster, which is stupid, or what are you going to do, donate them?
So the Fire Up the Grilli barbecue apron is being given away on June 18th, which is Father's Day. So do you guys think Jason Grilli lasts until then, or how long do you think he lasts after that?
Literally after the promo. In fact, if he pitches that day, regardless of whether or not he does well, I think they cut him.
So I'm going to read you four or three slugging percentages here, and you let me know if they're pretty good. 449, 1240, and 500.
Were those the slugging percentages of the people that hit home runs off Grilli?
Nope. Those are the slugging percentages against his four-seam fastball. It's 449. Mm-hmm. 1240 slugging against his slider. And 500 slugging against his changeup.
Wow.
Why is he throwing the slider?
I mean, he really shouldn't be throwing any pitch, really, anything. Other than his four-seam fastball, right?
But relatively, yeah.
So
give up the slider.
Yeah, and really, the problem for Jason Grilli has been his hard-hit balls. He's getting hit harder than he ever has at any point in his career. 47% of his balls in play have been classified as hard by PitchFX data. Basically, the highest at any point in his career. His home run to fly ball ratio is 34.6%. Again, the highest point of any point in his career by a long shot. The second highest was 17.2. He's just getting hit hard, and he is not fooling many batters at all.
Is it too late in his career to just completely overhaul what he does as a pitcher?
I mean, he could become a knuckleballer.
But no, I don't mean by becoming a knuckleballer, but I just mean, like, instead of throwing as hard as he does, throw slightly less hard, but do a Mark Burley pace instead of what he does, which is, like, piss off the batter by making them wait 30 seconds between pitches.
Yeah, I think he already takes long enough between his pitches anyways that I don't want to see him get longer.
No, I'm saying get shorter.
Well,
I'm saying, throw it as soon as you get the ball back.
Yeah. So anyways, and I think there's been some argument on Twitter for the Jays to release him. There's been some counter argument saying that, you know, before that blow up yesterday against the Yankees where he allowed four home runs, he'd gone 9 out of 10 scoreless appearances, basically, which is a fine argument to make. However, you look at those 9 of 10 appearances and they are all in very low leverage situations. So he came into the 7th inning of a 6-0 game or 6-0 game in which the Blue Jays were losing. You know, he came into the 7th inning in which they were up 5 runs over Seattle. You know, he came in to the 9th inning when they were up 9-0 against Atlanta. So like the Blue Jays haven't really been using him in high leverage situations, and when he has been, as he was yesterday, he's just completely the bed.
Yeah, but that's a good counterpoint, though, is because you still need arms in situations where you don't want to waste the starter if you're up 9-0 or you're down 7-0, you know? And yeah, if you're already losing the game, you might as, like, badly, you might as well just bring in somebody to kind of just be at the stopgap.
Yeah.
To not waste a good bullpen arm in a blowout.
Jason Grilly can be mop-up duty is what you're saying.
Exactly. I mean, you still need arms for that. And so, like, that's the one reason to not cut him, you know?
Yeah, so I think what will influence the timeline on Jason Grilly's tenure as a Blue Jay is, A, it depends on whether or not he continues to pitch as poorly as he has. But if he does continue to pitch as poorly as he has, then I think the Blue Jays may be forced to make a move once Aaron Sanchez comes off the disabled list, you know, because you'd expect maybe Joe Biagini to end up back in the bullpen.
Okay, but you still got people like Leonel Campos or something, right?
Sure, but Campos is actually doing okay for the Blue Jays, so why would you get rid of a guy like that?
Because he has options and isn't on an apron.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Campos currently isn't on with the big league team. So, like, I mean, sure, you could option a guy like Dominic Leone, who's been better than Grilly, or Danny Barnes, who's been better than Grilly. I mean, the other option is J.P. Howell, who's been basically just as bad, but the Blue Jays signed him in free agency. So unless they look to trade him for some piece and another, like, garbage swap like the Blue Jays did last year for Joaquin Benoit and Drew Storen, I don't know if Jason Grilly is on this team by the time Aaron Sanchez comes back off the disabled list.
Hey, how long in advance do you think that an organization would need to put in an order for 20,000 aprons?
I don't know.
Are you suggesting just scrap the day altogether?
No, like, what if you were to substitute the promo? Like, how much notice would you need to tell this company, hey, don't make those aprons, make something else?
Oh, they're probably already ordered. Because, I mean, they probably line up their sponsor as well. And so, like, you can't go to whoever's sponsoring the Fire Up the Grilly thing.
It's Schneider's. Like
Schneider's, exactly. Yeah. You can't say, ooh, sorry, guys. It's actually going to be a Leonel Campos fire.
No, like, you have just the smoke on the team already. Just grill up some smokies. Like, it's not a hard thing to do.
That's what I was actually kind of suggesting. Like, Grilly isn't a hard thing to substitute now. If you're looking at barbecuing, camping, I don't know, you can figure out something else to... But my question is, how long in advance do you think you guys would, as an organization, would need? I don't know, six months.
I think it's going to be
somebody in the Blue Jays. Like,
no, I think it'd be like as soon as like 10 business days, less.
Well, 20,000 is a lot.
Yeah.
No, there's going to be a bunch of interns in a back room with a whiteout pen, just whiting out the last I in Grilly, and just going to say, "Fire up the grill." And
yeah,
taking a basically. Sharpie to the eye.
Yeah.
Just fire up the grill. Or did they just try to change it into an exclamation mark?
Even better. So.
Okay, yeah. So I think that's it. We'll see what happens with Jason Grilly, but I guess I'd be surprised to see him on the team in July. That would indicate a real turnaround in how he's played.
Yeah. It's a shame. I've always liked Grilly.
Oh, no, great guy. Like, great guy who seems to love being in Toronto and, like, really appreciates the fact that he's playing for Toronto, which you can't say about a lot of people, right? There's a lot of people who look to Toronto as some kind of demotion, or it's, like, isolated and stuff like that. Grilly found out he was coming to the Blue Jays and was super excited about it and, like, has been great with Jays Care, has been great with the winter tour and stuff like that. It sucks because he genuinely appears to love being in the city of Toronto and playing for the Blue Jays. But he's been a turd.
I mean, yep. I guess if you kind of like knew that you're on the decline of your career, you want to get involved in stuff like that so that you kind of have more of a reason to not be cut.
Right.
Not saying that's what he did.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's unfortunate about Jason Grilly, but hopefully he can turn things around at least until his Fire Up the Grilly promotional giveaway. We're going to take a break and be back on the Bunt to the Gap podcast.
Welcome back to the Bunt to the Gap podcast. So last night, Saturday, June 3rd, Edinson Volquez threw a no-hitter in a 3-0 win versus the Diamondbacks. That is the sixth Marlins no-hitter since they became a franchise in 1993. The second no-hit appearance by the Diamondbacks. That is, they were no-hit twice. And he threw 10 strikeouts, 2 walks, and 98 pitches, which is a Maddox, which is a complete 9-inning game with 99 pitches or less.
Yeah, the cool thing about Volquez's no-hitter is that it came on what would have been Yordano Ventura's 26th birthday. Volquez and Ventura were close when they both played for the Royals. Ventura passed away this summer in a high-speed crash in the Dominican Republic, and Volquez, pitching on his 26th birthday for his friend, threw a no-hitter. Great story.
He did dedicate the game to Ventura and Jose Fernandez after, so... This made me look into no-hitters a bit, so I looked up a few things about no-hitters online. In this Sports on Earth article called Unusual No-Hitters, you might recognize a couple of these. One of them was Doc Ellis on the Pirates on June 12, 1970 at the Padres. The final line was 9 innings pitched, 0 runs, 8 walks, and 6 Ks. This game was famous for him having pitched the game on LSD because he thought it was one of his off days.
No. He took LSD... 2 days or a day before or something like that, and then tripped like the entire day before, and then like didn't come down for a day or something like that. Like,
oh, really? That was what? Okay.
Yeah. Like, I totally
understood that. He also hit a lot. Remember. Of that.
There's a good Netflix documentary about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called No No a Documentary, and you can go to No No a Doc, spelled D-O-C-K, umentary.com for more information about it. But there's also a 5-minute YouTube clip called Doc Ellis and the LSD No-No that's kind of illustrated about it, and I think that inspired the documentary.
Yeah, so another no-hitter was by Francisco Liriano when he was on the Twins on May 3rd, 2011 at the White Sox. So he, in this game, it was unusual because he had 6 walks and only 2 strikeouts. And it's the only game in which the number of walks were triple the number of strikeouts, and there were 6 walks as opposed to only 3 walks. So there's a number of these games. They're all 3 walks, 1 strikeout. He got help in that game by 3 double play balls and had entered that start with a 9.13 ERA. So this game kind of came out of nowhere.
Wow. Obviously, he was not being caught by Russell Martin at the time.
Well, the upside to that is that he probably do it again, hopefully, if Russ comes back. Mm-hmm. Seems pretty sharp with Russ, yeah.
Yeah. He was fine pitching to Maley on Friday night, as far as I saw.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Yeah.
So there's another no-hitter, Ken Holtzman, on the Cubs on August 19th, 1969 versus the Braves. What was interesting about this game was that he allowed 27 batters to put the ball in play.
Wow.
There was...
You got a no-hitter?
Yeah.
So every single one of his outs was a field out.
Was a ball in play. He had 0 strikeouts and 3 walks in that game.
Wow.
Yep.
You got to take your whole defense out for dinner after that.
Yeah. I think you do anyway, but Joe Cowley on the White Sox, September 19th, 1986, at the Angels, allowed an earned run without giving up a hit. That was pretty interesting. So he had 7 walks, 8 strikeouts, 1 earned run, and it was a no-hitter.
How do you get the earned run?
Walking people in, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, I guess so, yeah.
And lastly, Edwin Jackson on the Diamondbacks, June 25th, 2010, at the Rays, had 8 walks, 6 strikeouts, threw 70 pitches through the first 3 innings, a total of 149 pitches, of which only 79 were strikes. And that's it for unusual no-hitters.
Huh.
Moving to an article by Beyond the Box Score. So this was written the day after Clayton Kershaw's June 18th, 2014 no-hitter. And it was called The Greatest Modern Day No-Hitter. So this was interesting because everything in the article was correct, except that Max Scherzer outdid everything in this article on October 23rd, 2015, in his no-hitter versus the Mets. Mm. So, in this game, Kershaw put up a game score of 102, and game score is a Bill James statistic, which basically you start with 50 points, add 1 point for each out recorded, so 3 for every complete inning, add 2 points for each inning completed after the 4th, add 1 point for each strikeout, subtract 2 points for each hit, subtract 4 points for each earned run, subtract 2 points for each unearned run, subtract 1 point for each walk. So the highest game score ever recorded was by Kerry Wood in a 9 innings, 1 hit, 0 walks, 20 strikeout game. And then right after that was Scherzer's no-hitter, is 9 innings pitched, 0 hits, 0 walks, 17 strikeouts. If you guys remember, this was the almost perfect game, and then he hit the one batter right at the end.
Oh, yes, I do remember that.
It gently brushed him, basically. Or, yeah, like, it was or controversial. The controversy was that he leaned into the pitch, right?
Yeah, and he didn't even move out of the way. He just leaned into it. It was bullshit, but whatever. And then there was Kershaw's no-hitter, 102 game score, 9 innings pitched, 0 hits, 0 walks, 15 strikeouts. So before Scherzer, that was the third most strikeouts in a no-hitter behind Nolan Ryan's 17 and 16 strikeouts, respectively. And cool, because Kershaw and Scherzer's no-hitters were both almost Maddox's. Like, not almost, but pretty close. Kershaw threw 107 pitches, Scherzer threw 109. And Kershaw's game was, at the time, against the best offense in baseball in terms of weighted on base average, and it was the Colorado Rockies. So that's pretty interesting.
Actually, let me interject with a quick Clayton Kershaw fact. Did you guys hear he just reached 2,000 Ks? Well, in 2010, to be exact now. He did it June 2nd. He had 14 strikeouts on that game.
Yeah.
He is the second fastest to get to 2,000 strikeouts. Randy Johnson was the fastest. He did it in 15 less games. But I think the really interesting part is, in Randy Johnson's 262 games to throw 2,000 strikeouts, he had 857 walks. Kershaw, to throw 2,000 strikeouts, has only thrown 487.
That's amazing.
That is 370 less walks.
Clayton Kershaw is really good.
Yeah, Clayton Kershaw's pretty good.
Yeah.
We should trade for him. Trade Grilly for him.
I'd wear a fire up the Clayton barbecue apron.
And then the last article I found on no-hitters was written by Grant Brisby, published on SB Nation. And this is called How to Throw a No-Hitter and Lose by 4 Runs. It was published July 1st, 2015, the 25th anniversary of Andy Hawkins of the Yankees' no-hitter, July 1st, 1990, versus the White Sox. So let me walk you through a bit of this game, what happened. It was early in the game, Hawkins realized he had a no-no going because his opponent, Greg Hibbard, also had a no-no going. And it actually was a simultaneous no-hitter into the sixth inning, which is pretty cool. And then what happened for Andy Hawkins, in one inning, in a single inning, he had Sammy Sosa reach on an error and then gave up 2 walks in a row, so the bases were loaded. And then Robin Ventura hit a fly ball to left field, which bounced off the glove of the left fielder, and then the 3 runs scored. And then so immediately after that, with Ventura on base, somebody hit a right field fly ball, bounced off the glove of Jesse Barfield, and Ventura scored. So that's 4 unearned runs. Oh, sorry. 4 runs without giving up a hit in the same inning, and the Yankees lost. But he got a no-hitter.
That's when you do not take your defense out.
Yeah. And so it's pretty crazy. But he got a no-no after that. Do you celebrate that? I don't think you do.
Yeah, it's got to be hard to celebrate that, for sure.
I mean, probably not after the fact, but I imagine, like, when you look at your career, it's like, yeah, I threw a no-hitter.
I mean, 25 years later, if Grant Brisby writes an article about you, it's pretty good, right?
Yeah, but like, consider that those fly balls would have been outs normally, so it still should count as a no-hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it does. It's been acknowledged by Major League Baseball as a no-hitter, so yeah.
Cool.
That's all I have on no-hitters, you guys.
Okay.
Speaking about, like, just crazy stuff, yesterday more grand slams were hit than any other day in Major League Baseball history. 7 grand slams were hit on June 3rd.
Oh, just the date, you mean?
Yeah, and just on one calendar day, more grand slams were hit than any other single day in baseball history.
Okay, so let me get this straight. There were not 7 grand slams yesterday.
Yes, there were. Just 7. There were 7 grand slams yesterday.
Oh, what?
Across the league, yeah.
Damn.
Right?
I thought you meant there were 7 grand slams on June 3rd of any year.
No. This date, June 3rd, 2017, more grand slams hit on that day than any other day.
Wow. That's a lot of Papa John's pizza.
Right?
I was not dialed into baseball yesterday.
I mean, I know of 2 of them, right? Didn't Pujols have one?
Pujols hit one.
Schwarber had one.
Pujols hit his grand slam for his 600th home run ever.
Yeah. Congrats to Albert Pujols, by the way.
Yeah, when you think about like the players that we're seeing now and some of the all-time greats, like Trout, Kershaw, and Pujols, and maybe Ichiro, like in terms of like living legends that are playing right now.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Bartolo Colon.
I think Pujols is a little underappreciated right now just because he was so good like 5 to 10 years ago, and it's just you kind of forget about him, but he is still very, very good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We will take a break and be back on the Bunt to the Gap podcast. Welcome back to the Bunch of the Gap podcast. We have another listener email. So Ryan, he didn't say where he's from. I like saying Ryan from somewhere, but I assume he's from somewhere. I don't know. Everyone's from somewhere. Anyways, Ryan writes in, "Hey guys, when are you going to start ripping into Luke Maley like you ripped into Jared Saltalamacchia?" Which I think is maybe a valid question and probably deserves a little bit more of an explanation and some justification from us. So Luke Maley currently hitting a .125 with an OBP of 171 and an OPS of 387. Still not very good.
No.
But, you know, compared to Jared Saltalamacchia, he was hitting 40 with an OBP of 77 and a slugging percentage of 40 and an OPS plus of negative 67. So OPS plus, that is where you are 100, is league average. He was negative 67. And I think we realized it was awful a very long time ago. And not for saying Luke Maley is an all-star of any sorts, but even in terms of defense, he's been much better than Jared Saltalamacchia. So he's allowed 7 stolen bases, but he's thrown out 4 runners. That is a 36% caught steal rate, which in the league average is 29 right now. Jared Saltalamacchia, 9 stolen bases, 0 caught stealing. I don't have to tell you that that's a 0%. And in terms of things like framing runs, Luke Maley's a positive 0.6. Framing runs above average. Jared Saltalamacchia is negative 0.16 framing runs above average. Maley has better blocking runs. He's got positive throwing runs and positive framing runs. And Jared Saltalamacchia was just bad at all of these. So, yeah, Luke Maley is currently at a negative war. He is below replacement level right now, but he's much better than any of the other options the Blue Jays could have.
Yeah, he's much better. And also, he's actually been more than just okay in his last 4 games. He's actually on a 4-game hit streak right now. So, yeah, he was pretty bad for most of May. I remember going to the Mother's Day game and seeing he was hitting 30. But in the last 4 games, he has actually been more than serviceable.
Yeah, and he's only played 79 games in the major leagues in total. And that's over the last 3 seasons compared to Jared, who's played 890. So, yeah. You know, he's had a lot more time to prove himself, Jared, I mean, and really hasn't. Whereas, you know, Luke Maley kind of still developing. I'm willing to cut him a break because, you know, it's the same thing with Ryan Goins. Hasn't played that many games, and yet we're still forgiving of his poor batting. Also, Luke Maley caught Francisco Liriano without, like, letting him get blown up. So that was pretty good.
It's almost like the Blue Jays are a National League team right now, and Luke Maley's their pitcher. He's, you know, he's batting .123, and it's just batting at the bottom of the lineup. But he's there because he does positive things for you on defense. So,
yeah.
Ryan, to answer your question, at least until the defense is still there, and, you know, maybe until Maley, he's had 70 plate appearances right now. Once it gets to 100, and then the batting average is still where it is, then maybe we start to, you know, complain a little bit. But he just hasn't been nearly as bad as Saltalamacchia. I think that was part of it too, is that the front office tried to sell Saltalamacchia as like this viable backup option when everyone was like, no,
yeah,
no,
we knew that.
Yeah, exactly, and yet
Maley's hit 2 more home runs than Jared has this year already.
Yeah,
look at that.
I just dropped something.
Oh, I would not recommend it. So, anyways, Ryan, that's why we are not down on Luke Maley just yet, and reasonably, I don't think we will be. It is just funny to remember though how down on Josh Tolley everyone was.
Oh, I forgot about Josh Tolley. Can we just all agree to forget about Josh Tolley?
But I mean, like, this is what backup catchers are. Like, you know what I mean? They're just, they can't hit. Otherwise, they'd be starting catchers, and they'd be paid to be starting catchers.
Yeah.
Is Tolley still injured?
Yes, he had, like, a hamstring tear. He's going to be out for a while. They're suggesting possibly the whole season.
Oh, no.
Okay, so you can email your questions to podcast@bunttothegap.com, and we're happy to answer them on the air. We're going to take a break and be back.
Welcome back to the Bunt of the Gap podcast. I'm producer Sweet Nick. Guys, so Mike Trout, possibly the greatest baseball player in the league right now, is injured. Torn ligament in his thumb.
I was also going to say, you could have said possibly the greatest baseball player of all time. Like, and I wouldn't have argued with you. Like, you could say potentially the greatest baseball player we've ever seen. And
I will definitely give him potentially best baseball player ever. he's really good. And that's kind of what I want to talk to you about right now. There's a stat I read on Reddit Baseball. Mike Trout is the third baseball player ever to reach 50 WAR before the age of 26. The other two being Ty Cobb and Mickey Mantle.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Mike Trout, still 25, is now at 51.1 WAR. Obviously, he hasn't accumulated any more since being injured. Yeah, he's in great company.
I mean, I'd be surprised if he actually wasn't accumulating more wins above replacement.
Just by being Mike Trout?
Just by being there, yeah. Because his replacement is probably so bad that he's like getting negative WAR and thus attributing more to Mike Trout.
Does WAR actually work like that?
It does not.
Okay, no, you can't get WAR by being replaced and just being terrible.
No. Imagine though.
We're obviously not the first podcast to talk about how great Mike Trout is, but like it's kind of disappointing that he might be the best baseball player in the league right now, might be the best baseball player we'll ever see, and we take him for granted.
Well, yeah. I think it's part of the problem is that he's playing for the Angels and nobody wants to watch the Angels because they're a dumpster fire of trash.
Mm-hmm. Has Mike Trout ever made the playoffs?
Of course.
I don't know. I'm actually asking. Has he been in a playoff game? I don't know.
Yeah. A couple years ago. Yep. Let me find it for you. 2012, I think.
2012 sounds about right.
BB Ref, Angels.
Oh my God. Can you imagine doing a podcast? Well, A, not to say that podcast would have existed, but trying to do a podcast without baseball reference?
Ugh. That'll be terrible.
Yeah. Let's see.
So postseason 2014, a very bad batting average, very un-Mike Trout, but he hit 83 with a 267 on base and 333 slug in the postseason.
Four total bases in three games played. Yeah, great.
I mean, you know, small sample size, only 15 plate appearances, but yeah.
And that was when he was age 22?
Yeah, and again, like...
Forgive that.
Yeah, exactly. He hasn't been back since, so let's not write off Mike Trout as a postseason choker, quote unquote.
No, he is David Price now.
No, he's not. The Angels actually aren't doing too bad. They're just one game below 500. Second place in the West behind the Astros. We talked about this last week, Nick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, we did. I'm now remembering this. Yes, Angels were 500 when we had our last podcast.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I hope to see that Angels do well because I'd like to see Mike Trout be in some playoff games, some meaningful playoff games.
Yeah, well, I think most playoff games are meaningful.
No, I meant meaningful for Mike, like not batting 083.
I mean, if the Angels aren't in them, then they're probably not that meaningful.
Okay, let's move on. Nick, do you have trivia for us this week?
I have trivia for you every week. So this past Tuesday, May 30th, Josh Donaldson hit a home run to the 500 levels at the Sky Dome, something done by only 8 other Toronto Blue Jays since. Yeah, 8. I counted that right. So my question is for you now. Which of these Jays has never hit a fifth deck home run at the Sky Dome? Is it Joe Carter, Jose Canseco, Vernon Wells, or Jose Bautista?
Ooh, I'm going to say Joe Carter.
Yeah, Canseco definitely hit one because I remember it. I'm going to say Jose Bautista.
Well, this is going to be a first for trivia. You're both right.
Okay, was that a trick question?
It was a trick question in that I wrote down the question wrong. So Vernon Wells and Jose Canseco have both hit 500 level home runs, along with Josh Phelps, Edwin Encarnacion, Carlos Delgado, Sean Green, and Raul Mondesi. Josh Johnson just joined them. But yes, I wrote down Joe Carter, and I think I meant to write down Carlos Delgado. Yes. So Joe Carter and Jose Bautista have never hit 500 level home runs. So congratulations to the both of you.
I'm surprised Bautista never did.
I'm not surprised at it. Like, he doesn't hit those moonshots. He's got the line drive swing, right? The ball gets out fast, and that makes total sense to me.
Mm. I mean, you'd think that you'd at least get one, though.
This is the type of trivia that I like, where we both win.
Right?
Yeah.
No losers in trivia.
Well, I feel like I might be the loser in this situation.
Yeah. You're on a streak lately, eh?
Yeah, well, you know, I haven't been right on top of my game, I guess.
What I'd suggest is, like, before you write or ask us the trivia question, like, write it out and then, like, ask Alex. Alex loves your trivia, I know. Our friend Alex absolutely loves your trivia. So ask him and then see if it makes sense to him.
I think I will start bouncing my trivia off Alex at least 5 days a week to just make sure I have it down pat.
Yeah. Same question every day. All right. We'll see if Nick can get something better next week then. And hopefully Alex helps him out with that. Okay, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and all of your podcatchers. Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Bunt the Gap. on Facebook, facebook.com/buttothegap, and Google Plus, google.com/plus/buttothegap. Don't know why we say that every week, but we do. Email questions for us to answer on the air to podcast@buttothegap.com. You can visit buttothegap.com for all articles and analysis. Hopefully we'll have some new articles this week. And please share the podcast with others who might enjoy it and rate and review us in the iTunes store as it helps others find the podcast. We will see you next week. Go Blue Jays.